Okay, good morning, everyone. I figured in the absence of Shul the Shabbos, all of us are looking for things to talk about, things to say, things to discuss with our family. So I thought we'd spend just a few minutes this morning discussing some ideas, some insights into the Parsha. So I want to share three very short ideas with you, things that I think are relating to our situation, things that I believe can provide a little bit of meaning for our Shabbos tables. I'm just muting the rest who are have not yet muted themselves. Okay. And hopefully it'll give a little bit of perspective, a little bit of understanding, and again, something to talk about at our Shabbos tables. Obviously, like many of you, I have never wanted Shabbos more than I did this week. Certainly the connection to technology, my kids have been on devices nonstop, my checking the news all the time in the middle of the night, first thing in the morning, last thing at night. So like many of you, I am very much looking forward to Shabbos, to the respite of Shabbos, to the Kedusha of Shabbos, to being able to spend time with my family absent of any technology. So again, I want to share three very quick ideas with you this morning. Hopefully ideas that can generate conversation at your Shabbos tables and again can provide a little bit of meaning to us as we enter into the weekend. So the first idea is very simple. And I don't know that I ordinarily would have shared this idea, but I saw it and it resonated with me. It gave me a little bit of chuckle, and hopefully it'll give you a little chuckle as well. Pasuk in the Parsha says, Vayar Moshe es kol ha-melacha v'hinei asu osa. Moshe sees that Klal Yisrael did everything that they were supposed to do. Kashir tziva Adonai kein asu. As God commanded, that is exactly what they did. Vayivarech osa Moshe. And as a result, Moshe blessed them. Now, obviously, the million-dollar question that you get to when you get to our Parshios is why the repetition? Here you've had the Jewish people. We already spend two Parshios, Truma and Tetzaveh, discussing in very detailed fashion the construction of the Mishkan. And then we have a little respite in Parshas Ki Tisa. And now we come to Vayakel and Pekudei, and it's literally the same thing over and over again. It's repetitious. It's redundant. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to have that jump out at you immediately when you start reading the Parshios tomorrow morning. And so different commentaries offer different interpretations. Rabbeinu Bachya says that this is a way of Hashem showing his affection for the Jewish people. He gives the analogy, actually, that if you send your child off to school, right? Let's say you send your child to yeshiva. So you don't send your child off to Israel and say, I'll see you in a year, let me know how it goes. No, you're sending your child off, and then you're calling them every night, and you're saying, you know, how did you get enough to eat? Did you sleep? Is the school safely? Is everything going all right? You want to follow up with your children to make sure that everything went as planned. And so too, says Rabbeinu Bachya, this is Hashem's way of affectionately following up with the Jewish people. He gave us a commandment. He sent us into the Midbar. He sent us into the desert. And now it's as if God is calling us up and saying, how's it going? How's the food? I want to follow up with you. Did you cross your I's and dot your T's or dot your I's and cross your T's? Let me know how it's going. Rav Hirsch gives a different interpretation. Rav Hirsch says, you want to know why we repeat everything? It's because building of the Mishkan was filled with an enormous amount of detail. A lot of little intricate details that went into the construction of the Mishkan, very mundane tasks. And therefore, says Rav Hirsch, when you do a lot of very mundane tasks, the danger is that you'll lose sight of the broader picture and of the broader symbolism and the broader significance of everything that is supposed to be represented through the Mishkan. And so says Rav Hirsch, Hashem split up the construction into two. Parshios Truma and Tetzaveh were the physical construction of the Mishkan. Hashem literally instructed the Jewish people, here are the blueprints, here's how I want you to build it, go and undergo a physical construction of the Mishkan. But then Rav Hirsch says the danger in that is that the Jewish people would forget what the Mishkan was really about. And the Mishkan is really about a Kedusha, a spirituality, a way of bringing God into our lives. And so therefore, Hashem comes back and he repeats all of the details of the construction of the Mishkan so that you and I have a chance to reflect upon the deeper meaning, the holiness, the significance of every part and parcel of the Mishkan. So Parshios Truma and Tetzaveh is Hashem's way of saying, I need you to physically construct a building. Vayakel and Pekudei, says Rav Hirsch, is our opportunity to take a step back and say, what does this all mean? What is the Shulchan? What's the menorah? What's the significance of all the construction project? Why is it that a Mishkan was so important for us? So first you have Rabbeinu Bachya, why all of the repetition? You have Rav Hirsch, the beautiful understanding that this is our chance to appreciate the deeper significance, the holiness of the Mishkan. But I want to share with you a different interpretation. That's from the Rabag. The Rabag, Rav Levi ben Gershon, the 14th century commentary. So he writes at the end of his commentary on every Parshios, he says HaToeles, which basically means like, here are the following 6, 8, 7 lessons that I want you to learn from the Parsha. And listen to what the Rabag says about why Moshe Rabbeinu repeats everything that he detailed in Terum and Tetzaveh. He says, V'hu sheroi l'mi sheyadrich anashim. Anyone who is in charge of other people, anyone who's trying to motivate someone else, El HaTov, sheyashbichem v'yivarchem b'yishamam ledvarav. Says the Rabag in the 14th century that if you want to motivate people, it's critically important to praise them for a job well done. We take for granted that when we give instructions to someone, people are simply going to do it. Doesn't always happen. We're seeing that with coronavirus now. Simply telling people to stay home doesn't mean people are going to stay home. Simply telling people what to do doesn't mean they're actually going to do it. And so says the Rabag, Moshe Rabbeinu gave instructions to the Jewish people, and he said, I want you to construct the Mishkan. And you know what happened? Something extraordinary. The Jewish people actually listened. They did exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu had told them to do. And so Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to them, and he praises them. He praises them for having done a job well done. He gives them a yasher koach for doing it with such perfection and precision and so much enthusiasm. And so says the Rabag something funny about our Parshios. The entire Torah is replete with criticism of the Jewish people. Over and over again, when Klal Yisrael make mistakes, the Torah is the first book to point it out. It doesn't hesitate. One second, Klal Yisrael, sinned at Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, comes along the Torah, criticizes them. The Jewish people complain in the desert, comes along the Torah, criticizes them. And yet, says the Rabag, just as important it is to criticize someone when they make a mistake, it's equally, if not more important, to give someone a yasher koach, to tell someone, you know what, you did a really great job. I'm going to praise you for the job well done. And therefore, that's why the pasuk is, Vayivarech Osa Moshe. Moshe blesses them. What blessing did Moshe give them? The blessing was this blessing of positive reinforcement in the sense of encouragement for exactly that, for a job well done. In the 1950s, a man by the name of Frederick Hertzberg published an important study about motivational factors. And Hertzberg found that the most powerful motivational factor is self-achievement and being valued. In other words, when you give someone positive encouragement, you make them feel valued. And when you make them feel valued, they want to do more of it and they're happier to do it. And so I was thinking of this idea. I saw this idea from the Rabag and it resonated with me this week. We've been giving very detailed instructions to everyone what to do, what not to do. We've all been following the news, the CDC, the Department of Health, the Shul's been sending out emails. And I know for parents who have children at home, it has not been an easy week. Having your children at home, having to make a schedule for them, having them abide by that schedule, there's a lot of following rules that's going on. And I'm sure nothing like this happens in the Moskowitz house. Our children are perfect. I'm joking. But if your house is anything like my house, so there have been ups and downs this week, to say the least. And yet, I encourage everyone to take a page out of the Rabag. And this Shabbos, instead of focusing on what did not go right this week, instead to give positive feedback, to give positive reinforcement and encouragement to everyone, to show gratitude to your children, to your family, those who are following the rules, those who are doing what they are told, against the odds, with an extreme amount of adversity facing all of us, to show appreciation and positive encouragement to your children, to your family, for all of the hard work they're putting in, to show appreciation to your teachers, your schools, who under, again, less than ideal circumstances, have had to transform their entire classroom from an in-house classroom to a virtual classroom literally overnight. We are so quick to criticize, and yet we have to be equally quick to show that positive encouragement, to show that reinforcement, to make sure that people feel valued. Because not only will they want to do more of it, but they'll be that much happier doing it. Says the Rabag, you want to know why we have Parshios Vayakel and Pekudei? It's because Moshe Rabbeinu is looking at every single one of us, and he's saying, great job. You did what you're supposed to do. Do more of it. Yasher Koach. And that is something that each one of us should focus on the Shabbos, is the notion of saying thank you to those around you, of giving positive feedback, positive reinforcement, positive encouragement, gratitude for all of the hard work, even under the most extreme and dire circumstances. So that's idea number one, why you have so much repetition in the Parshios, the insight of Rabbeinu Bachya, the insight of Rav Hirsch, in the beautiful insight of the Ralbag, hopefully something that will allow us to put in perspective some of the challenges this week, and hopefully allow us to put a spin on what it is that we saw this week, not to focus on some of the negative and the criticism, but to focus on reinforcing those who are trying their best against really some of the most difficult circumstances. Second idea I want to share with you is an idea from Rapinkus. Rapinkus in his Sefer on Shabbos, which I realize is backwards for you, but it's Shabbos Kodesh. And Rapinkus says the following. He points out at least seven thematic themes between Shabbos and the Mishkan. For example, he says, based on Gemaras, both the Shabbos and the Mishkan, the tabernacle, forgive a person for their sins. Both Shabbos and the Mishkan have a significant clothes factor to it. Of course, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, the Kohen Gadol had to wear specific clothes. On Shabbos, you and I wear different clothes than we do during the weekday. Both Shabbos and the Mishkan, you have an emphasis on lighting candles. Of course, on Shabbos, that's the menorah that's placed in the Beis HaMikdash. And in our homes, of course, one of the most magnificent parts of Shabbos experience, I'm usually at shul by then, but I got a glimpse of it last week, is lighting the Shabbos candles. Number four, both have elements of cleanliness and washing oneself. You couldn't go into the Beis HaMikdash, you couldn't go into the Mishkan before washing yourself properly, before preparing yourself to make sure you are clean to enter into such a sacred and holy place. Shabbos is the exact same thing. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, the Rambam all say that part of our preparation for Shabbos is that we're supposed to wash ourselves, we're supposed to cleanse ourselves, we're supposed to prepare ourselves properly. Number five, both Shabbos and the Mishkan have an emphasis on the Shulchan, a table. Of course, in the Mishkan, there was a table where the Lechem Apanim was featured. And in our Shabbos experiences, right, the epicenter of our Shabbos experience is none other than a Shulchan, our Shabbos table, the laboratory of education that you and I have for our children and for our grandchildren. And number six, says Rapinkus, is smell. Smell played such a central role, in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Ktores that was that filled the entire Mishkan with a beautiful aroma. So too our Shabbos. Think about all of the magnificent experiences that you and I have, memories that we have of our parents, of our bubbies, of our zadies, going to their houses. So much of it is identified with smell. I know for me personally, when I come into the house, Erev Shabbos, so there's a certain smell that wafts through the air that lets you know, Shabbos is coming. It could be the smell of chulin pot. It could be the smell of Clorox because the floors finally got cleansed, right? It could be any number of things. But smell plays such a significant role in our Shabbos. That's number six. Number seven, says Rapinkus, is the idea of a reverence, mora b'mikdash. We know that there was a certain reverence and awesomeness that you needed to feel when you went into the Mishkan, and so too Shabbos. We have a concept of Mora Shabbos, that we have a certain reverence and awe when it comes to Shabbos. And so Rapinkus points out seven similarities between Shabbos on the one hand and the Mishkan that we read about in this week's Parsha on the other hand. And the question is why? What is the connection between the two? And the obvious answer is that both Mishkan on the one hand, the tabernacle, the Beis HaMikdash, the temple on the one hand, and our Shabbos, on the other hand, are both there to foster and to cultivate a connection with Hashem. The Mishkan was a physical entity where a Jew could go and see palpably the presence of God in this world. For us, all week long, we're wandering through this world aimlessly. We talked about it a little bit in the Tehillim class that I gave yesterday, that so much of our week is literally wandering. We feel like we're in that maze, a labyrinth that the Mesillas Yesharim talks about. And when you go in a maze, you don't really know exactly where to turn, left, right, and you're always confused. And yet you know that there's always someone in the guard tower on top overlooking the maze who's kind of laughing at you the whole time because he knows exactly the direction that you're supposed to be taking, but you have no clue what direction you're supposed to be going in. Says the Mesillas Yesharim, says Rapinkus, that's what Shabbos is. All week long, you and I are walking aimlessly. We're caught up in the rat race of life. And all of a sudden, Shabbos comes and it refocuses on what all this is about. It refocuses on what our priority should be, and that is creating a connection with Hashem in this world. Rapinkas tells the story of a famous Rav who was a great orator. And he was once giving a drasha, he was once giving a speech, and he was fire and brimstone, and he was yelling, and he was inspiring people, and the whole audience was in tears, and they were laughing, and they were crying, and everyone was so excited. And all of a sudden, he finishes his lecture, and a guy comes running over to him, and he says, "You know, Rabbi, that was the most amazing lecture. I just have one question. What's this HaKadosh Baruch Hu you keep on talking about?" And Rapinka says that is the captures what so many of us feel as we walk through this world. We're going through the motions. We're getting up. We're davening. We're learning a little bit. We're washing. We're doing the mitzvahs. We're going through the motions. We're going to work, right? And then sometimes we wonder to ourselves, what's this HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What's this all about? What's the purpose of what I'm here? How do I bring God into my life? And so says Rapinkas, the whole purpose of the Mishkan, the whole purpose of Shabbos is a mechanism to be able to cultivate that connection to Hashem, to remind us of what is ultimately essential in our lives, what is ikar, what is tafel, what is most important, and what is secondary. And of course, Shabbos is there to foster that connection with Hashem. That's why it has so many similarities. That's why it has so many connections with the Mishkan, to remind us of what all this is about, that you and I shouldn't go through our lives wondering, I know I went to work, I know I went to, I know I davened, I know I learned a little bit, but what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu? No, that's not what our lives should be. Shabbos is there to refocus us. Shabbos is there to remind us of what ultimately is important in this world, and that is our relationship with Hashem. So that's idea number two that I wanted to share with you. Beautiful insight by Rapinkas. Idea number three that I want to share with you is an idea that appears throughout Sefer Shmos, and it again comes up in our Parsha this morning. And it's the following idea. If you go all the way back to the beginning of Parshas Bishalach, I want to read a pasuk for you. This is where the Egyptians are coming. They're charging at the Jewish people. Paro has sent Bnei Yisrael out. And the Jewish people are basically exposed to the elements in the desert. And they're starting to panic. And what does the pasuk say? Lo yamish amud ha'anan yomam v'amud ha'esh laila lifnei ha'am. That Hashem didn't remove the cloud by day and the fire by night from before the people. Cloud by day and fire by night. The question is, what is the role of the cloud and what is the role of the fire? So says the Ibn Ezra, it's very clear. The fire and the cloud are there as protective measures. The Jewish people are wandering in the desert. As I said, they're completely exposed to the elements. They're nervous. They're anxious. The Egyptians are charging at them. And so God provides a physical reminder of his protection of the Jewish people. Other Mephoreshim understand that this cloud and this fire are basically a form, an early form of Waze. Right? How did the Jewish people know where to go? They come out of Mitzrayim. They don't know how to go left, right, center, or yashar, yashar, ve'az tishal, right? Go straight and then ask someone. There was no one to ask. How did the Jewish people know where they're supposed to be going? And so some of the Mephoreshim say that this cloud and this fire is there simply because God needed to guide the Jewish people. And so what better way to guide than to have a big cloud, and simply you follow the cloud and you know exactly what to do. But I saw this week that perhaps there's a different interpretation, there's a little bit more meaning into what this cloud and what this fire is. If you look throughout Sefer Shmos, it's very clear that the cloud and the fire represent the presence of Hashem. It represents the divine presence. For example, we come to Har Sinai. V'Har Sinai Ashan Kulau Mibnei Asher Yarad Alav Adonai Ba'esh. Listen to the words. Har Sinai was filled with smoke. It was cloudy because God descended in fire. Vayal Ashano Ke'eshan HaKivshan. And this like enormous smokiness emanated from Har Sinai because of God's presence. Again, God descends in fire, and as a result of the fire, what do you have? You have smoke. Come to the story of the, where Moshe Rabbeinu is on Har Sinai. And what does it say? Vayal Moshe El Hahar. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the mountain. Vayichas he'anan et sahar. And what happens immediately? Cloud descends upon the mountain. And what happens? Vayichaseu he'anan sheishes yamim. It covers the mountain for a very long period of time. Again, why? Umar'e kvod Adonai ke'esh ocheles barosh ahar. Why is there this cloud? Because God has appeared in what? God has appeared in fire. So again, you have this fire and you have this cloud. All the way at the end of Parshas Pekudei, the last four psukim of our Parsha tomorrow morning and of all of Sefer Shmos tells us that God finally descends into the Mishkan. He dwells in the Mishkan. And how does God dwell in the Mishkan? Vayichas he'anan es ol moed. A cloud covers the Ol Moed. And why does a cloud cover the Ol Moed? Says the last pasuk of our parsha. Ki anan Adonai ala Mishkan, because there was a cloud of Hashem on the Mishkan during the day. Ve'esh tihyeh laila bo. And at night, what was there? Fire. So throughout the Sefer Shmos, over and over again, you see this combination of clouds and fire, and every time you see that combination, it represents God's divine presence. Har Sinai, it's when God descends, it's with clouds and fire. The Mishkan, when God descends, it's with clouds and it's with fire. What's the combination? Why clouds? Why fire? Are they interchangeable? Or is there something different between the two of them? Now, if you think about clouds and fire, they have similarities, right? Both are physical, and yet they're not so physical, right? We used to play this game in camp where you used to run your fingers through fire, right? And the whole point, don't try it at home. The whole point is that fire's there, but it's not really there, right? It's physical, but it's not really physical. It's absent any material substance whatsoever. Both fire and cloud kind of hover in between heaven and earth, right? A cloud, obviously, and fire too. It's propelling upwards, but it's connected to something here. So both of them are physical, but yet they lack any real material substance. Both of them hover in between heaven and earth. But Rav Aaron Lichtenstein points out that there's actually a deeper significance between these two notions of clouds and a fire. If you think about fire, right, light. So what does light do? Light is clarity. Light is, when you're in a dark room, and all of a sudden, you turn on the lights, so all of a sudden you have clarity to that which was unclear previously. Clouds, on the other hand, is the epitome of mystery. It's the opposite, it's the antithesis of clarity. So if I'm in a room that's completely dark and I turn on light, or I light a fire, so all of a sudden everything becomes clear to me. On the other hand, if I walk out in the morning and it's completely misty, and the clouds are very low down, I can't see more than 2 feet in front of me. Every step that I take is shrouded in mystery. And so says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein that the combination between the cloud on the one hand and the fire on the other hand really represents our relationship with Hashem. That on the one hand, our relationship with Hashem is represented by fire. There's a certain clarity that we get when we have a relationship with Hashem. There's a certain intellectualism, a logic that you and I are able to employ when it comes to a knowledge of the world. The Rambam spoke about this, that we look into the world and we understand God. And that's obviously what you and I strive for, is a deep understanding of Hashem. We try to understand his mitzvos. We try to understand how he conducts the world. We try to understand as much as we possibly can. And yet, we come to times when it's not about the clarity of the fire, the logic of the fire, but our relationship with Hashem is defined by clouds. We get to a point in our relationship with Hashem where no matter how much we understand and no matter how much we think we have clarity, we realize that God is very mysterious to us and that Hashem's ways are very mysterious to us. And no matter how much mankind will be able to understand, there's a limit to human knowledge and there's a point beyond which you and I will never be able to comprehend and you and I will never be able to understand. I thought of this idea this week because I think it captures emotionally what so many of us are feeling. so many of us, we live in the 21st century, an age of technology, an age of development, whether it's with technology, whether it's medically, right? We have so much advancement in our day and age that we get lulled into the sense that no matter what challenges face the world, don't worry, mankind will be able to solve them. We will be able to figure out a solution to everything because we are so developed at this day and age that nothing can faze us. And yet sometimes we come to moments in life, we come to moments in our relationship with Hashem that aren't defined by the clarity, the logic of fire, but are defined by the cloud, by that mysteriousness, where we recognize that while we understand a lot, and while civilization and society has made enormous strides, you and I don't really understand. We really don't understand why Hashem chooses to do what he does. We don't understand how 2 weeks ago we couldn't fathom that you and I wouldn't be coming to Shul the Shabbos, that there would be illness, economic, right? We could never have fathomed any of that. And the best economists and the best doctors and the best politicians, none of them could have fully predicted what you and I are facing now. So despite the fact that you and I feel fire sometimes, we feel that we can put our faith in intellectualism, in clarity, in logic. Sometimes we come to a point where we realize that our relationship with Hashem is very much defined by those clouds, by a certain mysteriousness, by an awareness that there's a limit to our human knowledge and logic. That while we understand a lot, and while we have made great strides as society, there's also a point where we throw up our hands and we say, you know what, Hashem, there's a lot about you that I simply don't understand, and that's what it means. That's what it means to have faith. It means in those moments of mystery, those moments of cloudiness, that's when we have to have faith in Hashem about the way he conducts the world. And so every time Hashem appears, every time you see the divine presence throughout Sefer Shmos, it's both in fire and in clouds. Because on the one hand, we have to strive for that fire, for that clarity, for that logic, to understand as much about the world as we can. But when it comes to Hashem, we also have to realize that there's a limit to human understanding. There's a limit to what you and I can truly understand through our logic, and sometimes we just have to understand that the ways of Hashem are mysterious. I want to share one final idea, almost like a side note to this idea of the fire and the cloud. This from the Be'er Moshe that I saw yesterday, and I think it's such a beautiful insight. He says the last pasuk in the parsha is Ki anan Adonai al mishkan yomam, that the cloud of Hashem is during the day, ve'esh tielaila, and the fire is at night. Now, why is it that the cloud is during the day and the fire at night? He explains that anan comes from the word anav, which means humility. It's based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which says, have a kabil v'kayam, that a person should be dark and exist, which Rashi over there says means have a anav, that a person should be humble. Anan, essentially, says the Gemara, means that we should have a certain humility. And so says the Be'er Moshe, at moments when we feel that humility, moments when you and I feel like we're yomam, when we are in the day, when we're on top of the world, kianan, that's when we have to feel a little anivus. We have to feel a little humility. He says here, v'zeo haramaz b'kasav hazeh, kianan anayal mishkan yomam, b'shashe adam hu b'bchinas yomam, that when a person is in a state of yomam, in other words, we feel so high, b'rom, hamale, b'avodas Hashem, we're feeling so good about ourselves, we feel like we control the world, then there's a threat of arrogance. You can start believing in yourself too much, and therefore you need kianan Hashem. You need a certain humility. And yet the other side is also the case. The esh tia laila. When we're in times of laila, when we're in times of darkness, when we feel down and out, what do we need, says the Be'er Moshe? We need esh. We need to feel fire. When we're high up, when it's a time of yomam, when we feel like we're on top of the world and nothing can touch us, kianan, you and I need to feel a little bit of humility. But when we're feeling times of laila, when it feels times of darkness, when it is those moments of mysteriousness where we don't understand the world around us, when we feel like we're beaten down as a people and we're wondering where Hashem is, then says the Be'er Moshe, ve'esh tihiyeh laila, you need to feel esh. You need to feel like you're on fire. You need to double down on that relationship with Hashem. And use these opportunities of davening at home, of being around your children perhaps a little bit more, of being able to go outside for Kabbalah Shabbos under the stars and under the sky, and use those as opportunities not to crack and not to just throw in the towel, but ve'esh tielaila, that in moments of darkness you need to feel that fire. And therefore, says the Be'er Moshe, that's why the Pasuk finishes, le'enei ko beis Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem. In any circumstances, b'chol ma'aseihem, in all of our travels, the ups and downs, the vicissitudes of life, this is what is supposed to guide us. In a time of yomam, when we feel like we're on top of the world, ki anan Hashem, we need a little anivus. We need to not feel so arrogant. We need to not feel so high up. But in times of laila, ve'esh tihiyeh laila, you and I need to double down, and instead of throwing the towel, we need to make sure that our Judaism, that our relationship with Hashem is absolutely nothing short of on fire. And so during these difficult times, instead of using and saying, there's no shul, Shabbos morning, I can sit in my pajamas until 11 o'clock. No, this is an opportunity for us to double down. This is an opportunity for us to focus on things we otherwise aren't able to focus on. All the time we come to shul and we complain, I could daven with kavana. If only the guy next to me wasn't so loud and there were so many distractions. Here's our chance. Here's our chance. For all of us who say, you know, if it wasn't for the commute to work, well, I don't have a commute for work, but some of you do, right? If it's not for the commute to work, if it's not, then I could spend more time with my children. Well, I got news for you. We have that time to spend with our children. All of those things that we always say we don't have time for, let's make the time for it now. Let's focus on things that we're otherwise not able to focus on, and let's make it that during this time of Laila, that during this time of darkness, that it's ve'esh tiyeh laila, that our Judaism, that our lives will become on fire, and that we'll become the best versions of ourselves. And so in a half hour this morning, I shared with you three ideas that hopefully gave you a little bit of food for thought. Maybe we'll stimulate some conversations at the Shabbos table, give us a little bit of Erev Shabbos inspiration. Number one is the idea of the Ralbag. Why so much repetition? Why do we need these parshios? We already had Truman Tetzava, says the Ralbag. It's Hashem's way of saying, Yasher Koach, that we need to be praising and giving positive encouragement to people, not just criticizing them. Because when we do it, they become valued and they want to do more of it and they want to do a better job. And so in a very challenging week, when I'm sure we've been very critical of schools and of our children, right? Use Shabbos as an opportunity to show positive encouragement. Tell your kids, tell the schools, you know what, you're doing a great job under very difficult circumstances because it'll make them want to do a better job going forward. We saw the idea of Rapinkus, the seven connections between Shabbos and the Mishkan. We asked, why is there a connection between Shabbos and Mishkan? Because at their root, they're the one and the same. And that is about a connection with Hashem in this world. Both Shabbos and Mishkan are there to root us and to remind us about what truly our existence here is, and that is a connection with the Almighty, that we shouldn't go through life and at the end say, I did this, I did X, Y, Z, I crossed my T's and dotted my I's, but what's a Kadosh Baruch Hu? No, we should know. Shabbos is our opportunity to remind ourselves of what our relationship with Hashem means. And lastly, this beautiful insight by Lichtenstein is why the cloud and the fire, and it really defines our relationship with Hashem, that there are moments where we have a certain logic. There are moments where we pursue an intellectual relationship with the world around us, and then there are moments which are just shrouded in secrecy and in mystery, where we realize that there's a limit to our understanding. And yet the Be'er Moshe tells us that it's at the moments of darkness. It's those moments where we feel that mystery, where we might feel distance from Hashem, where we might be wondering, why is God doing this? Not to chas v'shalom give up and to throw in the towel, but ve'esh tihiyeh laila. During those times of Laila, to reinforce that our Judaism should truly be on fire. Three very simple ideas, hopefully some that you'll be able to share at your Shabbos table, some that'll get us into the Shabbos mood a little bit, and God willing, next week we'll be back in shul, but if not, I look forward to learning with everyone going forward as well. Everyone have a great Shabbos, a peaceful Shabbos, a healthy Shabbos for us and for all the Jewish people.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I figured in the absence of Shul de Shabbat,